My name is Steve Pierce. I'm here in the studios at the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy with Nancy Campbell. She has a new book out called OD. Welcome, Nancy. I know very little about it myself, overdose, except one chilling experience we had a couple of years ago when in the back of our building, in the parking lot, a man who was redeeming some bottles at the Redemption Center fell to the ground and started foaming at the mouth and trembling. One of our teenage interns knew exactly what to do and went over and helped him, called the EMS, and saved his life. Is that what your book's about?
It is indeed. The subtitle of the book, which was published a couple weeks ago by the MIT Press, is Naloxone and the Politics of Overdose. What your intern used was naloxone, and your intern was trained to use that, first by harm reduction activist groups, organizations, and nowadays by public health departments. Your intern probably had a very basic training and was able to save someone's life in that situation. An overdose is simply respiratory arrest, right? It's a sudden loss of breathing caused by the brain because the opiate receptors have been overwhelmed by an opioid. And naloxone comes in, and it has a higher affinity for those receptors, and it just goes and sits on them and knocks all the opioids off and restores breathing. There are, of course, timing issues and all kinds of other things, unfortunate things that might have happened. But in the case of a simple overdose, that is a simple overdose reversal. So very lucky. I'm glad to hear that that worked out well. What my book's about is how naloxone goes from being something that no one knows what is, something that's used by pharmacological researchers in order to understand the opioid receptors in the brain, something that's used by anesthesiologists if they overdose someone during a surgical procedure, and something that's used on emergency medical trucks, situations that most of us don't know that much about. And so what the book tells the story of is, how did naloxone go from being this specialty technology to being what I call a technology of solidarity? It's a technology that harm reduction activists use in order to educate the public, in order to educate people who might be present at an overdose situation, somebody like your intern who might witness an overdose, realize what it was because they were trained to do so, and happen to be carrying naloxone. I have a t-shirt that I start the book with that's "Keep Calm and Carry Naloxone," playing with the British wartime slogan, "Keep Calm and Carry On." And that's what naloxone gives people a chance to do. It, in many ways, is a drug that is used as a first aid measure. And it's probably a drug that most of us should have on hand in our medicine cabinet or in our first aid kit, just in case something of that kind happens to us.
Overdose. How long have we had overdose as a phenomenon in human history? Did it precede drugs? Is there alcohol overdose? Are there other ways of overdosing? Where does it begin? And then we'll get to this day.
Right. So I began the book in the 19th century when we had a very large, we were considered the world's most voracious consumer of morphine. And after 1898, we began to have heroin, but we never used it in the United States. It was never considered medical use. And so we have morphine and opium smoking in the United States in the 19th century, and overdose was known. In the 19th century, though, the people who were mainly using opioids were white upper and middle class women, such as myself, and they were often maintained by their physicians on opioids, and of course, opioids were regularly available to people without prescription. And so they were used, they were the most effective medications we had. They were used for dysentery and diarrheal diseases, and they were used for respiratory illnesses like tuberculosis. And so we had a lot of opioids in this country during that time. And so the book really begins there. And it begins, it asks the question of why does opioid overdose become a concern when and where it does? And the answer is that often it becomes a concern when there are shifts in the population of opioid users. And so it really rises to concern right after World War II, when there begins to be a spike in heroin use in urban communities of color, really, in the United States. And overdose becomes endemic at that time, and it stays endemic in urban communities of color during much of the middle 20th century. In the 1970s, it becomes more of a concern, and I begin to tell the story of New York City in particular. New York City was one of the epicenters of heroin use in this country, and it was a place where overdose began to become a public concern in the 1960s, in the 1970s. And so I try to tell the story of how the public becomes concerned with overdose before government becomes concerned with overdose. But the book is really about that. It's really about naloxone and the way in which, even though naloxone is discovered in the 1960s, early 1960s, it is FDA approved to reverse overdose in 1971. It does not become something that we give out or make available to people who are highly likely to witness an overdose until harm reduction activists get the idea in the 1990s, mid to late 1990s, in several different places across the country. There are groups of people who are generally working on activist issues like HIV and AIDS, and organizing needle exchanges, and starting to think about the health of people who are living with AIDS after antiretrovirals, because people are living with AIDS, but they're dying of overdose at much higher levels at that time. And so there begins to be groups of activists in lots of different places. They create educational programs, they create zines, they create systems, really, infrastructures for delivering naloxone to people who might need it and who might benefit from having it.
So when you say that people were living with AIDS but dying of overdose, is that because they were using drugs and people who use drugs overdose, or was there something about having AIDS that increased the likelihood?
No, I mean, we have had IV drug users. We have had high populations of IV drug users in this country, really since that post-World War II spike in heroin. And but these have largely been in populations that have been socially marginalized. And so we haven't cared that much about them. And there has been a kind of cultural othering of the addict. And so in trying to turn some of those constructs around and think about people who are living with addictions, and realizing how many of us live with addictions, the language has changed. We no longer call people addicts. We talk about people who might be in recovery or people who might be living with addictions, instead of sort of sending that stigmatizing signal. And so naloxone has been one of the tools by which addiction has been destigmatized to some degree. We also have today a parents movement and a movement of people who are realizing that just saying no is probably not enough to reverse this overdose death rate, and who wish that their own sons and daughters had been dealt with differently, with more dignity and more compassion. And so harm reduction is that kind of a philosophy. And so now we have a harm reduction parents movement that's really different from the parents movement that occurred in the earlier sort of Just Say No period during the Reagan administration.
Nancy Campbell, chair of the Department of Science and Technology Studies at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York, and author of the new book, OD.